I'm Jesse Brown, and today, in the spirit of Canada Day, we're heading to the World Championship of Canada's greatest game. No, not that one.
And Haggerty misses short, but it might be just short enough that there isn't a takeout 20 chance. Wow, this would be a really amazing long ricochet. Oh, and he went for the 20. He just misses.
Wait for that. James Nicholson, hello.
Jesse Brown, how are you?
I'm just fine. What are you doing here, James?
I don't know. I think I'm lost.
I'm not used to seeing you or hearing from you on Mondays. We were together on the Wednesday and Friday edition, the Media Criticism Show. You are the producer of those shows.
That's right. You can't get away from me. I'm followed you. I've tracked you down to Monday, and I've invaded your sanctuary safe space here.
Why?
That's a good question. I'm here because I have a story about a great Canadian game. And spoiler alert, it's technically a board game. And I hear you, Jesse Brown, actually have a hidden history in the world of board games. Is that true?
I have a board game lore in my family. My dad invented a board game.
Wow, really?
Yeah, my dad was a shrink, and he and my uncle and another guy in the 80s invented a board game called Therapy the Game. A board game based on... It was a board game based on psychoanalysis. It was self-published at first, and they advertised it like in the New Yorker. And then it got picked up like by Milton Bradley, and it was a hit in Germany. I don't think it did well in the States, but in Germany, they did like three or four editions.
There was this big boom in board games, especially in Canada, in the 80s. Trivial Pursuit... That was invented in 1979 by two Canadian journalists. It was a big hit, Canadian game. There's Balderdash in 1985, which was invented in Toronto. There's also Pictionary, an American game, but the inventor's actually born in Canada, so we can kind of claim that too. So Jesse, as we head into this Canada Day holiday, I think it's a safe bet to say that there's plenty of folks out there who have some of those famous Canadian board games stacked somewhere in a closet at their cottage or in their basements. But there's another great Canadian game out there. To me, it reigns supreme. It is none other than Crokinole. Okay, I'm guessing from the blank look on your face, Jesse, that Crokinole wasn't actually part of your childhood.
No, I've never played Crokinole.
What?
What is Crokinole?
It's a game where you're flicking wooden discs towards the hole in the center. All right, it's a lot like curling. You have to knock your opponent off. You're trying to get closest to the center as possible. So that's the basic idea of how to play Crokinole. But there's another way to describe it. And this was actually one of its big selling points when Crokinole was in its heyday over 100 years ago. It was marketed as a game with no objectionable features.
This is the most Canadian board game of them all. I see what you're getting at.
Yeah. And it turns out that the first reference to Crokinole, official recorded reference, was actually in 1867, the year of our Confederation. This is a very Canadian game.
Is this something that people still play?
Yes. And that's what this episode's about. This game, although I mentioned it had its heyday around the turn of the 20th century, it was like this hot new game that was marketed in mail order catalogs in the 1890s and early 1900s, got popular across Canada in particularly in more religious communities like Presbyterian, Baptist, Methodist, especially in Mennonite communities.
This is what Mennonites do for fun.
Yeah, exactly.
James, I'm reluctant to ask you this question because I fear that if I ask you this question, you're going to answer it. Why do you have a Crokinole board in your home?
So like a lot of people, I grew up playing Crokinole at my cottage. It was kind of like a family game for us. But about 10 years ago, I found out that there's competitive Crokinole tournaments. And so I ramped up my practice, ramped up my play. I played thousands of rounds of Crokinole, and I made my way to the World Championship.
There's a World Championship? This sounds like a variation of Tiddlywinks. There's a World Championship?
Come on. Come on. That's an unfair comparison.
Where did you have to travel to compete in the World Championship?
Yeah, so I had to go to a hockey arena in Tavistock, Ontario. It was about an hour from my house.
Is it always held in Ontario?
Yeah. Southern Ontario is actually kind of like the heartland of Crokinole. If you go to Tavistock for the World Championship of Crokinole, it's got like a Coachella feel. Like, this is almost like a festival. There's a huge, varied host of characters who are drawn to this game.
I will concede that I'm very curious to know who the other people are who play this game.
Yeah, I don't think you'll be disappointed. And actually, I think by the end of this, you're going to be trying to get your own Crokinole board.
You want to bet?
Sure.
That seems contrary to the ethics of Crokinole. But I'll take your money. Wait for it.
Hey, you on the road yet?
Yeah, man.
Look at you.
My car is hanging on by a thread. Literally, a raccoon on the 407 ran right out in front of the car. This raccoon was like, it was a tank. Like, it ripped off that whole part.
That guy that just had a run-in with a wayward raccoon is Andrew. Over the last decade, we've bonded over thousands of games of Crokinole. And he's driving to meet me at the championships.
There's a lot of leakage. There's no warning lights or anything. And when I got it,
Andrew and I are on a collision course with the best in the world. And it's going to take a lot more than a raccoon to stop us.
Nice. Yeah, you better get there by 8:30. If you show up after 8:30, you can't play.
Oh, I know. Are you there?
I'm just rolling through New Hamburg. So I'm
oh, the dirty bird.
Oh, yeah.
We're headed into the heart of Crokinole country, a small town in southern Ontario called Tavistock. This is Crokinole Mecca. The earliest known Crokinole board was built just outside of Tavistock. And since 1999, it's been the home of the biggest Crokinole tournament in the world.
I mean, this is all out my way. My dad used to have a law office in New Hamburg. He used
oh, really?
To have hockey practices in New Hamburg.
Wow, so you're coming home.
I'm coming home, baby. Tell the world.
This is a story of chance run-ins, collisions, meaningful or otherwise, an old Canadian board game of skill and dexterity, and a world championship.
Welcome to the 2025 World Crokinole Championships. My name is Joe, and I'll be your MC for the day.
When you're a guy like me, a glutton for the game, a Crokinole connoisseur, there's a lot of celebrities here in Tavistock today. I'm a bit starstruck. Over there, I see Wiley veteran Robert Bonnet.
But what a great match, and Robert Bonnet's surprise, really, of the tournament here, and he wins the 2017 World Crokinole Championships.
And there's gentleman sniper, Andrew Hutchison.
That does it there. Hutchison will be taking the first 2 points.
There's the most famous man in Crokinole, official board builder, Jeremy Tracy.
Nice double from Tracy there.
The pride of Michigan, Connor Reinman.
Connor Reinman, the two-time current and returning World Crokinole Champion.
I spot the red-headed Beerling brothers.
Our first team is Ray and Jason Beerling.
And then there's five-time world champion, the escape artist, Justin Slater.
The infamous Justin Slater, five-time World Crokinole Champion.
But there's another guy I'm keeping my eye on, a newcomer, an unknown, a dynamic dark horse who burst onto the Crokinole scene only months ago and put the world's best on notice. Devin Fortino.
He was probably like the dark horse, right?
Fortino has done it again.
Within a few matches, we have sort of all realized, okay, this guy's good.
Devin Fortune Fortino with yet again another brilliant performance.
You can't get that far in a tournament that strong with luck alone.
What will be remembered as one of the greatest upsets in competitive Crokinole history.
I get you to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Dem Fortino.
Where are you from?
From Osterville, just outside of North Bay.
It's like an early morning for Crokinole.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was, got a coffee in me and tried to wake up and get the jitters out. But, yeah.
For all the hype around Devin Fortune Fortino, if you met him, you'd never guess he's Crokinole's hottest prospect. Like all of the best assassins, he's unassuming. He blends in with the crowd. He kind of reminds me of a hockey player, but scaled down to an average stature. He's 33, wears a white baseball cap, he's got a dark playoff beard. And not unlike a lot of the hockey players I hear interviewed on the sidelines, Devin is friendly, but he's understated. He's kind of like a hockey player. He lets his game do most of the talking. However, since Crokinole isn't a professional sport, at least not yet, Devin's calm, easygoing, low-key vibe is the perfect fit for his day job.
I work as an MRI tech at the hospital in North Bay. A lot of people are like nervous to go into the machine. It's a little intimidating. So the majority of the job is just calming people down and kind of helping them get through the test.
Devin's doubles partner is his older brother, Nick. Nick is 37. He's an emergency room doctor from Sudbury. He looks almost identical to Devin.
What's your name?
Nick.
Nick. All right. The brother of Devin.
That's great.
I hear you're a doctor.
Yes.
A doctor of Crokinole.
Of Crokinole. I wish.
How does the pressure of this compare to the emergency room?
It's different, honestly. It's so different. I would say I get more nervous here.
Is that right?
To be honest with you, yeah. Like in the emergency, you're trained to know how to respond to the nerves, I guess.
Your brother's an anomaly showing up.
He is.
Just crush in. All right, well, thanks, Devin. I'll check in with you along the way. Thank you.
Line forms on the right face.
As the Fortinos head back inside to the arena for more Crokinole, I get sidetracked. Now, what is this? So here's what's happening. At the entrance of the arena, there's a middle-aged man in a fedora wearing aviator shades, and he's performing to an audience of one. Just this guy who's standing there dutifully nodding his head with the music.
Look at old Mac, he is back. There you go, good job.
Thank you.
Hey.
Not bad. So can I introduce you in a t-shirt or a hoodie?
How much are they going for?
Okay, 20 for these, 30 for these, 45 for the hoodies.
Is the performance part of the sales?
The performance is separate. If you want to, tip me something for the music side, then this is just, for fun. Because it gives me something to do while I'm waiting for everybody to play the f***ing game. Say that out loud. Sorry.
So this parking lot Bobby Darren, he's selling Crokinole merchandise from under a tent out front of the arena. I grab one of his business cards from a stack on the table. On the card, there's a headshot of him wearing the same fedora. It says Maple Marsh, jazz singer.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear some dad jokes?
Sure, yeah.
Sure, okay. So let me give you a couple of dad jokes. So why do seagulls fly over the sea?
Don't know.
If they flew over the bay, they'd be bagels. Right?
Nice.
Okay, that's pretty bad, actually. So I have a fish that can break dance. Only for about 10 seconds, though, and only once.
Thanks, Marshall.
Hey, you have a good day. Mention me in your podcast.
I will.
Yeah, Maple Marsh from Maple, Ontario, jazz singer, having fun.
Like a lot of Canadians familiar with Crokinole, I associate it with cottages. That's where I grew up playing it. But this is the world championship. So I want to know, has this game really expanded beyond our cottages and kitchen tables? Is Crokinole a global phenomenon?
All right, can I get your name again?
I'm Jort.
And where are you from?
I'm from the Netherlands.
And did you travel here just for Crokinole?
Actually, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, so we stick a vacation around it, but we decided to go for the Crokinole.
Okay, and tell me your team name.
It's the Roaring Twenties.
Just to clarify, the Roaring Twenties is actually a fantastic crokinole pun. A 20 is kind of what you're going for in crokinole. That's when you shoot the disc into the center hole in the board. It's worth 20 points. That's why it's called a 20. So a Roaring Twenties themed crokinole outfit, as far as crokinole puns go, that's a bullseye.
Okay, and tell me about a bit about your outfit, if you could describe it.
It's like we tried to do the traditional 1920s style to fit with our theme of the Roaring Twenties. So we have our little hats on.
Yeah. Like a fedora.
We have a nice vest on.
It's very sparkly.
And this is, maybe you can see this, of course, but this is handy and classy. It's a brush and it's on a chain, so I won't lose it.
So I'm looking at a small painter's brush attached to what would be like a watch chain.
Right.
Like a pocket watch chain.
Yeah.
And what do you use that brush for?
So if there's a lot of powder on the sides, I can sort of move it very easily, disperse it so it's not too much.
This painter's brush is more than just a prop for his costume. It's actually a competitive advantage. In addition to the super smooth, fast finish on competitive crokinole boards, there's shuffleboard wax added into the ditch along the edge of the board. Before each shot, you rub your disc in this fine, yellow, rubbery powder. That ensures a consistent, smooth glide against the board surface. It's kind of like adding some chalk to your cue and pool. It's part of the pre-shot ritual. And this tiny painter's brush, it helps yurt arrange the powder into piles with optimal consistency, which reduces variance.
We are going to ask you to find your seat. Remember, no food or drink.
The other half of the Roaring Twenties crokinole team, he's equally committed to the bit. He's got his own fedora, his own vest, his own pocket watch chain attached to a painter's brush.
You're very sharply dressed.
My name is Sean de Bruchman from North Holland.
And what's the crokinole scene like in Europe?
It's very crowded. And what I mean with that, it sounds like a football match.
Oh.
Because there are spectators around, beers all aside, less really competitive style. But the overall goal is to have as much fun time as they would like.
And when you play in Europe, is this thought of as a Canadian game or is it just a game?
No, for me, it's actually a typical and honorable Canadian game. They represent this game with so much pride, and I love it. I love it from the very first time that I met this on YouTube by coincidence. Can you imagine?
We have over 400 players registered for the day. So give yourselves a round of applause for being one of those. We have 65 players from the United States. So we have the people from the United Kingdom, people from Japan, and people from the Netherlands. Give them a round of applause for coming.
There aren't a ton of rules in crokinole. It's a pretty straightforward game, but there are a few rules in crokinole that have nothing to do with the board itself.
You are not allowed to move your chair once the game begins. Once your chair is in place, you have to keep one of your butt cheeks on that chair at all times.
You heard correctly. There is a butt cheek rule in crokinole. Gluteus maximus dexterity, it turns out, it's pretty crucial to this game. Everyone learns how to perch and lean on a single buttocks to reach those tricky angled shots.
Tell me a little bit about the one cheek rule.
The one cheek rule is you position your chair.
Yeah.
And you can't move your chair for any shots. You can lean over your chair. You don't have to sit square in your chair.
Yeah.
But one cheek does have to stay on the chair. You can't lean over and put your hand on the floor for balance.
Right. Yeah, so it is that posterior agility that is key.
The reason I know all this, that's because I'm a huge crokinole nerd, and I tracked down Mr. Crokinole Wayne Kelly's out-of-print book on the subject, the aptly named The Crokinole Book. It's the Bible of Croak, the Croak Bible, 96 pages of carefully researched crokinole history and lore. Since it's out of print, I had to pay $150 for my copy. That's $1.56 per page. And I gotta say, it was worth every penny. I mean, this tome, it tells me things I couldn't possibly find anywhere else. Things like what Canadian literary icon Lucy Maud Montgomery, the author of Anne of Green Gables, you might have heard of that one, what she thought of crokinole. Here's the quote.
over to the party, but I can't say I really enjoyed myself. Alf doesn't dance, thinks it's the unpardonable sin, so I didn't dance much either, but played crokinole most of the evening and was bored to the point of tears. I love dancing, and I loathe crokinole.
That's what Lucy Maud Montgomery had to say about crokinole from her diary in 1897. She was 22 years old. But not all young people share Lucy's opinion. At the World Championship, I see a lot of young people who are clearly loving this weird old parlor game. One guy who looks about 20 approaches me.
What's your podcast called again?
Canada Land.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I give you a shout-out on my TikTok?
Sure. Yeah, I'd love that.
Because I'm somewhat famous.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't want to say famous. Like,
okay. What's your TikTok?
CoolSteph23.
Okay. CoolSteph23, also known as Steph, he's approached me with his dad, Kevin. They're a father-son team competing in the recreational division.
I have 270,000 followers.
Wow. And you do crokinole content?
No, I don't.
What do you do?
Eating videos.
Okay.
My most viewed video has 18 million views.
Did you catch that figure? His most viewed video has 18 million views. Now, what could possibly get that many views? Here, I'll save you a trip to TikTok. In CoolSteph23's most viewed video, he pretends to eat bread. His head's to the side, mouth open, and a full loaf of sourdough bread slowly descends. Admittedly, it's an old familiar bit, but Steph has added a twist. There's ASMR chewing sound effects added in. His dad tells me the popularity of this video might say something about the future of civilization. He might be right. I'm actually impressed that Steph is giving life to an old classic.
Yeah, I'll check in with you guys after the singles.
Okay, sounds good.
You're playing the singles too?
Yeah, they are.
Cool, thank you.
Good luck, guys.
And just like that, a TikTok star fades back into the crowd. But I'm kind of like a crokinole disc, bumping off pegs and ricocheting across the board. Next, I bump into a DJ, DJ Morgan Starr.
Waitresses are super beautiful. Shout out to Stephanie and Liv if you're listening to this. And all the Morgan Starr DJ fans, hashtag DJ Morgan Starr.
Is that you?
That is me, yeah.
And do you play crokinole?
Yeah, I got into it.
Was it compared to DJing?
It's a different world. But at the same time, they cross paths.
How?
When you're focusing on the mix and when you're focusing on the flick.
Right. You think there should be DJs here at the crokinole tournament?
Yeah, absolutely. People want to feel good. I also think you're going to attract more babes.
Right.
I mean, and I say that in the most respectful, politically correct way.
Right. Do you think there's an absence of babes?
I mean, this would be my first spot for babe hunting, but there are lovely people here. They're absolutely lovely. They're good people. Everybody's super friendly. You got people from all walks of life. You got tattoos, you got earrings, you got canes.
Right.
You got smiles, and that is what's important.
When I ask people why they're playing crokinole today, so many of them tell me it's about community. And it's been that way since the very start of crokinole. Again, this is according to Wayne Kelly's Crokinole Bible. In small town Ontario in 1937, crokinole is, quote, just what you did. When it got cold, instead of warming up the community center, you'd set up a board at every house in the neighborhood. Matches were played concurrently. Whatever team won would bundle up and move on to the next house. The losing team, they stayed put and waited for another team to arrive. At the end, everyone gathered together for a nice lunch. Sounds lovely, doesn't it?
You are then going to play the best 2 out of 3 games. Good luck.
Oh my gosh.
I finally catch up with the dark horse, Devin Fortune Fortino. He's made it all the way to the semifinals in the singles. The singles is the main event of the World Championship. Out of 400 players, the field is now narrowed down to just four.
Evan, how are you feeling?
Good. Yeah. A bit nervous, but
yeah,
we'll see.
You don't show it.
That's good.
You're looking calm.
Yeah, good. That's what I'm trying to personify.
Yeah, fake it till you make it.
Yeah, exactly.
The match is about to begin, so I head to the sidelines to watch, and I spot Devin's brother, Nick, the emergency room doctor. I ask him how Devin's doing.
He's feeling good, you know. I don't want to say too much, but his game is sharp. He seems pretty focused. His energy level seems good, but he's up against a top player, so yeah, he's going to have to keep the 20 streak going here.
So, like, can you gauge vitals from a distance?
I wish I could say yes.
Devin is playing well. His 20s are dropping, and I can tell he's in the lead. But from the sidelines, it can be hard to keep track of the exact score. So I check in with tournament organizer Nathan Walsh for an update.
Nathan, do you know where we're at in this match?
Yeah, Devin's up 4-2 in the third and decisive game. So if Devin wins or ties this next round, he'll win the match. And Andrew needs to win this round to send it to a winner-take-all one round. One round for the whole match. So
it's not hard to follow at all.
Devin could possibly win this with a perfect round if he made every shot for an open 20. And he's looked really smooth so far.
A perfect round is when all your 8 discs land in the center hole. It's kind of like watching a bowler getting strike after strike after strike. It gets more exciting with each consecutive make.
But Devin only needs a tie here, so if he makes 8 in a row, he wins the match. So that's
6. 6.
Yeah,
and 6.
Yeah, two more to go.
In 7.
So this is it for the match here.
Wow. He's done it. Devin scores a perfect game to win in the semis and move on to the finals.
Like for first and second place will be Sean versus Devin.
Woo! Wow.
So yeah, 2 first-time finalists, first-time playoff attendees in the championship match. So we're going to get a new winner. Yeah.
That's huge. Yeah, 1 step closer.
After that dramatic, perfect game to win the semis, Devin is headed to the finals. They're starting shortly, but meanwhile, there's something happening on the other side of the arena. I think I've got just enough time to investigate.
Here comes the paparazzi.
Hey, you don't juggle in the middle of an arena and then not attract some attention, right?
It's hard to miss this guy. He's 6'4", an athletic build. He's got a Tom Selleck mustache and a brown, curly mullet. Earlier in the day, I saw him balancing a crokinole board upright on his forehead. Right now, he's juggling, but he's not juggling 3 balls. That's pedestrian. Hell, I can even do that. He's juggling 5.
My name is Mark Wilder, and I'm a crokinole enthusiast. I'm a professional juggler. I discovered crokinole at a juggling festival in Minnesota, where the after party at a performer's house, we were playing crokinole. And so I went home, bought a board, and now I travel the fair circuit with my crokinole board and get anyone who's willing to play with me.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. I didn't know this juggling crokinole crossover existed.
You know, they're both like really fine motor skills.
Right. Obviously, you're like a very skilled juggler, but there's probably a lot of, is there pressure? Like,
yes, but not like in crokinole when the timer's going down.
How'd you get into juggling?
I discovered juggling late in life when I was 29. I was a unicyclist first.
Of course.
that was the gateway. So yeah, on my 22nd birthday, I decided to go sober, quit drinking, doing drugs, and smoking cigarettes. And I was driving home from work, and I passed a bike shop with a unicycle in the window, bought the unicycle. Now I'm 23 years unicycling sober. Started juggling at 29, so now I've been performing for 15 years full time. Anything to quiet the voices in my head.
You mentioned like substances and then moving to a different substance. The unicycle.
Right.
Do you think there's like a crossover there where it's like it's filling that void in some way?
Yeah, probably. It's just I definitely have I have an addictive personality.
Right.
Certainly have some ADHD, so I'm kind of all or